we can make recommendations as to what analogs are appropriate, or you can choose and curate your own set of analogs, and we'll use that as the input to the engine.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use artificial intelligence to make sure that you get your drug price right from the beginning. Pricing is one of the most difficult parts to get right for a product launch, particularly in today's environment. But the benefits for getting it right are huge. However, there are many examples of companies that failed to do so. One that really springs to mind is Zelltrap from Sanofi Aventis. And what happened there was the most blistering attack was done by a trio of oncologists from Memorial Sloan Kettering, and they took out a full-page ad in the New York Times discussing why they would be taking it off the formulary because the price was way too expensive and there were effective alternatives, much more cost-effective, particularly Avastin. Initially, Sanofi stuck to their price, but eventually they gave 50% discounts off the price to institutions. So it left a little bit of a bad reputation and a lot of ground to make up. But they're not alone. There are many, many examples of pharma companies that have got the price wrong at launch. But can artificial intelligence help you improve your company's launch price at launch and get better results? My guest today is Alan Crowther, who leads the Navlin practice at the company Evsana, whose proprietary integrated platform combines data and artificial intelligence-powered insights to answer pricing and access questions. Thanks for coming on the show, Alan. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here today, Andre.
Before we get to talk about AI in market access and pricing, could you tell me a little bit about your background and what you've been doing and how you ended up as head of the Navlin practice at Evsana?
Sure. So I have an interest in artificial intelligence really forever. I even before I got to university, I was already out at Carnegie Mellon studying artificial intelligence prior to university. So it's been a lifelong interest. And I got into the pharmaceutical industry about 20 years ago when I brought my background in analytics and algorithms from financial services to the pharmaceutical industry and as a consultant. And it turned out I loved the industry. I found my spot. Helped co-found a company adjoined that was bought by Capgemini, where I did consulting work. But from there, I wanted to build a company again, but I wanted to do more of a software and data versus just of a kind of the classic advisory work. And that's really what led to Navlin today. The brand has only been around a year, but the product suite, the software and data, I started that 12 years ago at a company called Agility Health. Was bought by Evsana in 2017, and it's grown about more than 200% in the last 4 years under Evsana's leadership, which has been great and supportive of me building the business out. So long road to get to where we are today, but it's been great to build world-class tools in this space for the industry.
It's very cool. I actually have been getting for the last few months a lot of emails from you, and I hadn't read all of them yet. And then I bumped into Mike Ryan. We were sitting next to each other on a flight and started talking. And that's how this came about. So very, very interesting background and amazing, perfect fit into what you're doing now. I understand that the Navlin platform combines data, artificial intelligence, and insights, covering over 100 markets to help plan, evaluate, and execute pricing strategies to drive global access. Can you tell me a little bit more about how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to it. It's a very robust platform. But you know, the first part is really just collecting the data. Pricing data, reimbursement data, all has to be brought together. Some of it can be automated. Some of it we can apply machine learning to automate that collection. And some of it simply has to be manually curated. meaning we still need the human mind to mm-hmm. augment or enrich the data. From there, we apply software and algorithms that provide the insights into the different pricing decisions. But there are many kinds of pricing decisions for different situations. There's different machine learning or algorithms or methods that we use. There's no such thing as a single machine learning tool that can apply all this data to all these situations. So it's really our knowledge of pricing that lets us adapt the software and data to current and emerging pricing problems.
Sure. And what data do you use?
So I think at the core, we're really picking up pricing data, mm-hmm. but just as important, cost of treatment. The price of a product isn't the same as how it actually or what it costs to treat that particular disease. And for that, we have to go out to prescribing labels, look at the dosage for each indication, et cetera. We also gather clinical data, mm-hmm. Things like that. And the actual decisions that payers make, they actually publish a large amount of information in their decisions. They don't just say, I'm going to reimbursement, but they provide a rating and economic analysis. And we're structuring and pulling all that together using both machine natural language processing as well as human intelligence to create a very structured set of data that then is amenable to or supportive of the algorithms generating insights. So there's a huge upfront piece to all this pricing, cost of treatment, clinical data, evidence, HTA data that you feed into these.
And how many data points do you usually analyze to get the insights?
So from a base point, we have more than 6 million data points in the system, and we add to it every week. We've identified several million more that we have yet to collect and cleanse that we want to add. So we never stop. We're like a giant vacuum cleaner trying to suck up as much information as we can. I would say several thousand data points for a given drug in a given therapy area for a set of markets is typically enough to yield very good insights. Sometimes you can't get that much that's specific to your situation. And the software is good at saying, hey, there's less confidence in the prediction or a wider range of potential outcomes, the less data that you have available to make that prediction.
Sure. And do you supply the data completely, or does your client need to bring data to the table as well?
So there's an awful lot you can do without bringing a single point of data. Okay. We have a lot of the customer's data already, but what we have is public data. Mm-hmm. There are things that customers have that are strictly confidential to them. And we can take what we do and combine it with their data only for them, because it's their confidential data, and use that to enhance the answers we provide. Mm-hmm. But there's an awful lot of value. And we have, you know, more than 100 customers who are just making decisions off of what's publicly available in the tool set before they even start to add anything additional.
Wow. And so data is one thing, and it's obviously one of the most important things. But how do you turn all of that data into providing these contextual insights to help your clients achieve a strong price that obviously gets maximum profit, maximum market penetration?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple parts to that. So the first is you have to be a pricing expert and a payer expert to begin with. If you don't know how good decisions are made, or even how decisions are made, or how to price well, it's going to be very hard to direct the tools to get the results that you want. So we have people who've been on the payer side and have been pricing for years. And our goal is to kind of deconstruct how they do things, figure out where do they make shortcuts or heuristic decisions because they can't process all possible data or all possible combinations or look at things, and augment those areas with what the machine does well. So we understand how payers score products and use that to simulate your products based on how they've scored things in the past. Or, you know, a launch sequence, you have to simulate so many potential different price points and combinations to understand how the reference pricing will cascade, not on a single decision, but over dozens of decisions and dozens of different points. It's too hard for a human to look at that. We know how a human would look at it, but they're going to take shortcuts because they can't process every combination. We can use sophisticated algorithms like simulated annealing to do it. And I think that's really the key is, understand how good decisions are made, understand how people make their decisions, and then use all this to make them better. And we always talk about artificial intelligence and machine learning, but it's always an amalgamation of different techniques. It's not just okay, we're using neural processing here or natural language processing there. It can be more historically interesting, but not what I would call classic artificial intelligence with things like simulated annealing and discrete simulations. And we combine these different techniques to put it together. And I think that's all that together, the expertise plus the breadth of algorithms is what generates the best insights. And then the last piece is subtle but important, getting the visualization right. So that people can interpret the answer and make sense of it, because a picture is worth 1,000 words. We have to get the right picture and save, that 1,000 words of 1,000 points of data that you have to scroll through to get to the insight.
Yeah, for sure. And so for your pharmaceutical clients, what kind of advice, well, for any pharma working in market access and specifically pricing, what kind of advice would you give them in terms of switching from traditional approaches to an artificial intelligence approach?
So I think a couple of things to think about. One is take the leap and start to bring it in if you haven't today. I think it's very important that you do so and start to gain that experience. As you do so, a couple of things to keep in mind. One is I view all of these as what I call decision support tools. They don't make the decision for you. Mm-hmm. They're models that are useful. They don't override your judgment because there's always things that are unique. The market can be changing. All these machine learning tools and everything else are really based on the historical empirical evidence, right? And the future can change. So you have to make judgments about the future. The model can say, based on inflation or economic contraction, here's what payers have done in the past, but you still have to make judgments as to what is going to happen mm-hmm. in the future and feed that into the tool. So I think viewing these as models that can give you one or a range of outcomes that can support the decision that you ultimately make is the way to look at it. And I think you have to pick tools that are not black boxes. You need to understand what drives these decisions, which can be tough with artificial intelligence, so that you can know when is the tool missing key inputs because the environment is changing. So I think those are the things that I would advise people to think about, as opposed to, oh, I press a button and I get an answer. I'm not a fan of that sort of thinking.
And how easy is it for someone to use? You talked about you've got the visualization. Could you talk us through the process of a client using it, for example?
Yeah, so easy use from the tool side is something that we're really big on. We've got a fantastic designer in Andrew Hanhauser because we're trying to remove use of the software as a barrier. So the main user of the concerns is really how to apply the tool. And I think the tool gets applied different ways at different stages, but you're going to take a look at, here's a product I'm trying to launch. What other products are similar to this? We can make recommendations as to what analogs are appropriate, or you can choose and curate your own set of analogs, and we'll use that as the input to the engine. So we don't sit there and have one single predictive model, but you can tune the model in real time to say, if payer is going to make decision on this new combination therapy in oncology, similar to these other 30 oncology combinations that have been approved, then you can use that as the more heavily weighted input to the engine, as opposed to products that are more removed. And again, we can make some suggestions there, but that's also where some judgment comes in. And I think making the search for analogs easy and the ability to incorporate them in easy means that the tool doesn't become a barrier. It's really about your understanding of the problem and how you go about solving it.
Okay, sure. And how many, you say you cover 100 countries. Which countries are those? I know I won't get you to list every single one, but in general, what regions?
It is global, right? So all of Europe, North America, all the major developed Asian countries. So that would include South Korea and New Zealand and so on, but also China, India, the ASEAN emerging markets, Middle East, the Gulf Council countries, most of Middle East and North Africa, actually all the major South American markets, South Africa. So they're all included. It's when you get to really third tier emerging markets in Africa and places like that, where we're not, they're not big markets,
Yeah.
And many pharma companies don't even have a presence there. They're distributing through the WHO or other organizations. So, you know, I think we're covering, you know, what matters. And yeah. I don't even know how many languages we work in, but we're probably operating in more than 40 to 50 languages today.
And so for all those 100 markets, do you have data already in your system for all of those markets?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That is so cool. Is it a subscription platform?
Yes, it is. So it's web-based, and it's, you know, very much in line with what we think of as software as a service or data as a service. So customers are typically signing up from 1 to 3 years. And, you know, we've done a great job. We retain every year over 95% of our customers. So I think that's why we've been growing to about the 150 customers that we have today. And really, we only lose customers when they products fail, if they're a single product company, if their product fails, or a merger and acquisition. I think of the companies we've lost in the last 12 months, it's all been merger and acquisition or product failure.
Okay. Well, that's amazing stats on customer service to keep that high rate. So that's impressive. Obviously, you're delivering. Can you explain to the listeners how what you're doing with AI differs from the traditional pricing approaches?
Sure, absolutely. And I don't think we necessarily replace some of the traditional tools. So primary market research combined with evidence generated from health economic teams drives pricing without tools. And those continue to be important. The predictive tools help you identify weaknesses in your primary research or in the data. Mm-hmm. The payer said X, but they've done Y in 5 other cases. Maybe they've accepted higher prices in 5 cases. Maybe 5 cases they haven't achieved that price. It lets you know where your opportunities and threats are. Yeah. And I think that's very important for stress testing what you're bringing to market. It also provides the ability to generate results when primary market research and other tools are too expensive. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a lower cost option for products that are perhaps inexpensive. Maybe you're doing a fixed dose combination of generic products with a unique formulation and delivery model, but it's still not a high value product. And you can't spend $1 million on global price and access research to bring it to market when your margins are thin. So yeah. It's helping get, you know, slightly innovative products to market cheaper. And I think that's important because not every product's a blockbuster.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly these days, particularly because we're looking a lot more at, you know, smaller areas because all the big areas are done.
Absolutely.
How does it determine the pricing recommendations then?
So essentially, and again, a difference, we do pricing over the full life cycle. So it's through making different use of different tools at different parts of the life cycle. But I'll talk about launch. Okay. That's everyone's favorite. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about the others.
The biggest problem, yeah.
Yeah, we talk about the others as we go on. But essentially, it's mimicking the decision process of the payers, okay. Right? So payers are going to sit there and look at comparators. What's their cost of treatment? How does this compare to those? It's going to try and predict the rating. What typical range of incremental value have payers assigned based on, say, in France for an ASMR 2 or 3 in oncology, where I've got, you know, differences in progression-free survival or mean OS, mm-hmm. what has traditionally been assigned, a range of values have been assigned for those ratings in those situations relative to comparators. And we use all these kinds of inputs over many examples to come back and predict the range that are possible. And that's just kind of one part of the data set. So we're using everything, the safety, efficacy, all the things that payers may score. We're bringing all that in for your comparators in similar decisions to try and predict what the outcome would be. So that's one example of how we do it.
Okay. And so, of course, to act on these recommendations, they need to come to you at a certain stage before they've got too far down doing all their dossiers. What stage do they typically come to you for pricing?
So they're really using it. So in terms of the how do they act on it, and then how do, you know, where do they come to me in terms of acting on it? I kind of talked a little bit about this before, but you know the tool is easy to use, but the analyst still needs to be sophisticated, right?
Yeah.
It's, the analogy I use is like, it's like, it's not a Tesla with a pricing autopilot, right? You still have to be a qualified, you know, licensed driver that with your hands on the wheel. So you have to be knowledgeable to use the recommendations, although it generates them easily. In terms of where they use it over the full life cycle. So people even use this before launch. Like when you think of business development, in or out licensing, when you need fast asset valuations and don't even have time to do primary research, then you can generate insights in 24 or 48 hours to help in those situations to start to give initial guidance. Is this asset a hard pass or something I want to look harder at? Right. Then you can get into the pre-launch, the planning. That's like 18 months out. You're starting to do those kinds of things, taking a look at, you know, what countries am I possibly going to have to delay my commercial plans from launch sequencing impacts. And then in line, when you're planning for indication expansion or price changes or trying to model policy changes to, you know, 2-3 years out from loss of exclusivity or, you know, loss of patent, to start to plan, what's this going to mean to my revenue? What kinds of tactics can I use? What do different tactics mean in terms of contracting, tendering? How fast are generics going to come in? We can predict all that and help you plan for loss of revenue as you come into a loss of exclusivity and how you want to manage that as well and what strategies you need to use.
Wow, that's so cool. That's really cool. So I wasn't even thinking about that end of the life cycle, but yeah, being able to manage that would be huge because there's, particularly in the next few years, there's a big patent cliff coming. And so many companies are going to have huge amounts wiped off the balance sheet because of that. So this sounds like an amazing option to help minimize that loss to a degree, maybe not fully, but to a degree.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're, you know, the loss is going to be real for sure.
Yeah.
But it's going to help you make, you know, good decisions about what you can do. Like what's the impact of maybe focusing on just certain strengths, or, you know, if I forgive some revenue or forego some revenue today for long-term contracts and supply into the early stages post-patent expiry, will payers consider it? What's the impact of that? How fast are competitors going to come, and what does that mean in terms of all those kinds of things we can crunch through, as well as even things like we're getting into emerging areas like inflation. Yeah. Where, you know, this is squeezing margins on lower priced products. Where are my best opportunities to try and mitigate that? I have limited resources once products become heavily competitive and inexpensive. I can't spend a lot of money trying to raise prices everywhere. How can I choose my best bets? And that kind of predictive intelligence helps you make good decisions about where to allocate your scarce resources.
That's really interesting. Is there a particular part of this that you see the most use? Would that be launch, or do you see clients? It is launch.
Yeah, no, without a doubt, launch and some inline decisions, because that's where the revenue is. So that's where everyone's focused.
Yeah,
But I do think, you know, the managing the revenue at the margins does matter. You know, because, you know, those mature products still fund innovation for the next generation. And we want manufacturers to get fair value, not bad press. We want to get fair value in a way that sustains innovation. And because there's been tremendous innovation in the industry over the last 10 years, the number of new products and rare diseases that have been tackled. And I think we want to sustain that while making sure our healthcare system's funding is sustainable.
Sure. And could you maybe give an example of a specific client? You don't have to give any names, and how they use the platform for launch and what the results were?
Sure. This is an interesting example. It's a bit different, but it's a great story I love to tell. So a company in-licensed a product from another company that it just didn't fit into their strategic portfolio. And so they in-licensed it in the middle of launch, meaning they were in some major markets, but they weren't everywhere. And as often happens in these deals, you know, they work out the manufacturing details and the royalty terms, but none of the information, none of the studies on pricing, the price strategy, any of the primary research, none of that came over. So they basically picked up a product in the middle of launch and had no idea how to price it from here, what payers thought of it or anything. They just had the product. And yes, at a high level, they had some ideas, but not something that was going to let a pricing team manage the next 20 pricing decisions.
Yeah.
So we used automated tools to predict what was going to be possible and do all that. And we did a very short period of time. And it was important because in some cases, this company hadn't even opened affiliates in some of the markets they wanted to launch to. So they had to have a sense of what was the price going to be in these markets. They didn't have a local affiliate to ask questions of. They didn't want to spend a lot of money on primary market research in markets that maybe they didn't want to even go into. So being able to predict the possibility and range of outcomes, and actually we automated the generation of the price strategy, then added some advisory on top of it. As I said, I don't believe in the Tesla pricing autopilot approach, but you know, that really helped them quickly fill a gap and do so inexpensively on a product that was divested from a larger company because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a blockbuster. So, you know, doing that was solved a critical problem in a way that you wouldn't be able to with traditional techniques at all.
Wow. Are there any drug categories that you wouldn't want to use this for, that it wouldn't work for in your mind?
Well, I hate to say it, but yes, right? There are cases where it doesn't make sense. If a product isn't reimbursed by any government and there's no tenders or public data, then we just don't have the data. We're limited in what we can do. So a product that's included as part of a hospital procedure where the procedure is reimbursed is probably not a good candidate today.
Okay.
Another area would be digital therapies where there's just not, it's not really a drug then, it's a digital therapy, but those don't have enough data to allow for prediction today. I think that could change over time.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, some really innovative categories or categories with very little data, and I gave the two main examples, are areas where it's difficult for us to do that today. But, you know, we're always working at ways to plug some of those data gaps. In fact, we're actually working on both of those data gaps today to see what we can do to make that possible tomorrow, if not today.
That's very interesting. As you said, you're hoovering up data every week. So yeah, that's interesting. How long does it take? So say, and I can think of a few people who may want to talk to you after this. How long before someone has the answers when they come to you? So say they didn't have much data, they were in the US market and they wanted to get some pricing decisions made. From first coming to you to getting recommendations from Navlin, how long does that normally take?
Yeah, so the time to value can be very short, right? The data-driven insights from kind of like an automated analog search and basic can be done in less than 30 days.
Okay.
And, you know, a complex launch sequence, you can see the value from that right away, right? So, you know, and really you can do it in less than 30 days. It's really, it's more the time it takes to align on the understanding of the product and making sure that everyone's comfortable and taking the outputs and do it. The actual core might be just 5 to 10 days to realize some of these insights. I would still recommend that you take the time to do everything right. So you can push the button on the tool and get an answer in 5 days. Tool doesn't take that long, but you know, you have to gather the data, you know, confirm it, make sure it's accurate, et cetera. So I would say there's a lot that can be done in less than 30 days, even if it only takes a week to two to actually get results out. But it takes time to have people look at, ask questions, socialize outputs. But you know, I would typically forecast, hey, 30 days is something in which you can get very interesting results faster than primary market research, which is typically a 2 to 3 month process, and faster, because we do support for business development and in licensing where you need preliminary answers in 5 days or less quite frequently.
If you were a really small biotech, like I'm thinking of one in particular that has one product and that's it, would it not be, instead of a subscription, would it be more of a project fee for something like that?
That absolutely. We offer that model, which is, hey, if you're not a frequent user of the platform, just we'll do it for you. And we'll save all of that for you. So if you later decided, if you grow from that one product biotech into the next Gilead or whomever, you know, you can bring it in-house, so to speak, when you're ready. But no, we can we can take the wheel for you and nice. Produce the answers quickly. We actually have we call it Price Express, and that's a team that specializes just in the fast turnaround answers to questions. And that's important too. Like when you don't have time to negotiate a product license, sometimes the lawyers move slower than the speed of business, and you just need an answer now.
Yeah, I think in most cases, the lawyers move slower than the speed of business, from what I see. Really, really fascinating and really impressive. Really impressive product. How long did it take from beginning to end to develop to where you are now?
So I started this in 2010. I had a friend come to me and say, hey, there's a gap in good tools and data. And I'd say it took 5 years to get the core pricing data. Then we started tackling cost of treatment. And then it took another 2 years to really get the HTA database to mature. Yeah. Now we're hoovering up all the public tender data, which we're more than a year into. And I view it as an ongoing process as opposed to, as I said, right, the vacuum cleaner is never shut off. We just keep adding more, both on the existing, but we're constantly adding new sets. And, you know, and I'm very grateful to Eversana for giving me the money to continue to, and the customers, we get funded both ways, to turn it onto new data sets.
Yeah.
But I have a 2 or 3 year backlog of new data sources that I want to go after to continue to enhance it. So I view this as a never ending cycle of improving the insights and the things that we can do with the platform.
I think it's important for pharma to get that, because I see so many pharma trying to reinvent the wheel with these kind of things. And what many don't realize is it can take a decade to get to where you are now, you know, with one of these AI tools, and companies that are doing it are just doing that. So it's kind of at the highest level, it's going to be almost impossible to replicate that from a pharma company perspective. So it makes so much sense for them to basically outsource this part to you.
It's absolutely true. Like, people could buy just our data without the AI and try and rebuild that. And I think over time, they're going to find that there's so many specialized ways in which you apply AI in different situations that they can solve one as well as us today, but then they're going to miss out on 9 other areas in a year, and then we're going to surpass them because we're constantly working and investing in it. I think my team size is about 200 people, so no one can really invest that much on an ongoing basis without it being a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And market access teams aren't very big typically.
No, I would say pricing is like the most underfunded area within within businesses. The teams are so small.
Yeah. And it's such a critical component to get right. So it's kind of crazy. So thank goodness you're there.
Yeah, no, that's my, and McKinsey and others have said the same thing, right? Pricing's your single simplest lever when it comes to this stuff, compared to trying to take costs out of your supply chain or, trying to accelerate your R&D process. Those are big projects. This is a simple targeted way in which you can, move the lever between level of access, price, and revenue. And it's an area that makes sense to invest in, given how much impact you can have from such a targeted investment.
Yeah. Well, lots of things there that are fascinating for the people who work in this space in pharma. And I think that you really have built something pretty impressive. For anyone who's listening who wants to get more information on Navlin and Eversana, please head over to their website, which is Eversana, EVERSANA.com. And if you look down through the solutions in the menu and navigate to technology solutions, you'll see Navlin there. And you can read about it and contact for more information. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Alan. I think this has been very, very beneficial for anyone in this space. And I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much for your time. And if I could just add one last thing for any of your listeners, we're happy to extend on data.navlin.com, which is the subsite just for the product set. We're happy to offer your listeners a free trial to some of the data and aspects of the tool. If they want to, they can come on over and sign up, and happy to arrange for any pharmaceutical manufacturer who doesn't have the tool today a free trial.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm sure everyone will appreciate that. Thank you again for your time, and we'll speak again soon, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Bates.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.